two things I knew. I knew that I was going to be able to come up here today, look around here, and some of y'all are going to be wearing coats and hats. I'm looking in the back there. Harold told me before we even got to Sunday school, he said, no, I'm keeping the coat on. Like, it's that kind of cold, right? But the other thing I knew to be true was that somewhere Jennifer Huffman was going to be really happy because she just stays hot, you know. And so anytime it's cold, it's like polar bears, you know. They're cool with it being cold like that, you know. So it's very great to be here this morning. Had a very fun-filled, adventurous weekend. It felt like it was much longer, but it really wasn't even, like, because the weekend's not even over. But it just felt like it was a much longer weekend than it actually was. Talking about discovering Jesus, right? And when we have gone through this series and looking at the way that Jesus impacted people, a lot of it was first contact. It was people's first conversations, their first experiences with Jesus, right? It was a lot of discovery because people are waiting for this Messiah, and they didn't exactly know what to expect. They didn't know exactly what they were going to see. And you see the reactions, you see the responses, not only of the people who were being healed, the people who were seeing these things, but also those who didn't necessarily always like Jesus. They didn't always, you know, welcome the thing that Jesus was bringing as a Messiah. And what I want to look at today is a little bit different, because what we haven't done is spent a whole lot of time dealing with the teachings that Jesus did. Obviously, he taught in all these different things in these different ways, but we haven't spent a lot of time dealing with the teachings. And I want to look at something that anybody in here, maybe it's just me, but anybody in here ever like read something in the Bible that you haven't read in a long time? And when you read it this time, it's like, how did I miss that? Like, how did I miss? I've read this probably a dozen times, a couple dozen times, and it just didn't quite hit me this way. Well, there's a couple of passages that I want to look at today as we continue to discover Jesus and what it is that he wants us to do in our life and what he's trying to tell us to do, and sometimes do differently than we've always understood it. The title of the sermon is Wanted, Herpetologist. How many of you all know what a herpetologist is? Don't worry, I'm going to give you the answer in a little bit. Not right now. But moving forward, how many of you all went to school for business, or you've studied business? Okay, a few hands go up, right? So if you have a question, you can ask Darlene or some of the other hands that went up. But one of the basic fundamental things they require you to do when you study business is that you have to take courses in macroeconomics and take courses in microeconomics. Now, microeconomics is different than macroeconomics. Microeconomics deal with basically, without going too far off into the weeds, it deals with smaller budgets, things that are more individualized, personal. Macroeconomics deals with things that are much larger. So when you're talking about, for example, the, you know, interest rates for, you know, banks and all these types of things, you start getting into macroeconomics, right? Even though it applies to microeconomics, because you as the individual, or as a couple, or as a family, you might want to go buy a house, right? The important thing to understand is while they are related, it requires a different type of thinking to really understand why it is that macroeconomics works a certain way, even though it's dealing with money the same way that microeconomics does. And so you'll hear people in politics, they'll say, well, if I have to balance my family budget, then why shouldn't the government have to balance theirs? And anybody who's ever studied business, you look at them, it's like, yeah, I see what you did there. But that has nothing to do with the other thing that you're talking about. And so we're going to see this thing where Jesus points out to some people who are listening to him, his disciples, in this story, something that relates to this. In Luke chapter 16, and you know it wouldn't be Sunday here at the Dover Church of Christ, and I was speaking if I did not make an error on one of these slides. So we're actually going to start in verse 1, not in verse 10. Luke chapter 16, starting in verse 1, says, Jesus told his disciples there was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him in and asked him, what is this I hear about you? Give an account of your management because you cannot be manager any longer. The manager said to himself, what shall I do now? My master is taking away my job. I'm not strong enough to dig, and I'm ashamed to beg. I know what I'll do so that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. So he called in each one of his master's debtors. He asked the first, how much do you owe my master? 900 gallons of olive oil, he replied. The manager told him, take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 450. Then he asked a second, and how much do you owe? 1,000 bushels of wheat, he replied. He told him, take your bill and make it 800. The master commended the dishonest manager because he acted shrewdly. For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than are the people of the light. I tell you, use worldly wealth to gain friends for yourselves, so that when it is gone, you will be welcome into eternal dwellings. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. So if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? And if you have not been trustworthy with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? Now, it continues, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. The Pharisees, who loved money, heard all this and were sneering at Jesus. He said to them, you are the ones who justify yourselves in the eyes of others, but God knows your hearts. What people value highly is detestable in God's sight. Now, when we read this passage, and many of us, we've read this and heard this in every possible way, shape, or form, because it talks about how we are to deal with money. And most people, we get to that verse where it says, no one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. And we hear that and we think, yeah, you can't worship money. You can't be so greedy and so caught up in your money and your wealth and your possessions and all the things that God gives you that you lose sight of the fact that that reflects on your character, that reflects on your heart. But we forget about the context in the first part of this where he says, you sat and you squandered the wealth. You squandered this opportunity that I gave you with these resources. I gave you these accounts. I expected something. I expected a return on my investment, right? But you squandered it, and what did he do? He said, okay, you know what? I'm about to lose my job. I'm about to lose my place. There's no job security here. I need to hurry up and do something. And then Jesus even goes as far as to say that people out there in the world, as it was compared to people of, as it says, the light. See, we like to think of ourselves as being people who are in the light. We're in the way. And yet he says, people in the world better know how to be shrewd. Shrewd with their money, with their finances, with their resources, with the things that I've given them than the people of the light. And so we see this contrast and you think, well, what exactly is Jesus saying? I mean, it sounds like he's telling me to go out here and curry favor or somehow use my money to make friends. Well, that doesn't sound very much like Jesus. But see, it's that word shrewd. It's that word shrewd that sticks because we see shrewd in other places. Jesus even talks about being shrewd in other places. And that's kind of what I want to focus on. I want to think, how is it that we, as his followers, as his disciples, as people who are children of the light, those who are of the way, those who are trying to be like him, what is he saying to us about how to handle the resources that he gives us? And there's two major things I want us to look at. But first, anybody recognize this thing? I know it may be hard for some of you youngsters. This is the Yellow Pages, right? Now, it was interesting. I had an opportunity to go to a workshop, this conference, over the weekend. We went up to Hershey, Pennsylvania. And so this guy, he gave this example. He was talking about the Yellow Pages, right? And how with the Yellow Pages, and I remember when they came up with this, I was younger, they had this little ad campaign, "Let your fingers do the walking," right? And the idea was, this marketing campaign was to try to encourage people to utilize the Yellow Pages when they needed information and they needed examples of, you know, where to go and what to do. And he was talking about how he remembers going to the Yellow Pages and looking for a church. Now, I don't know if anybody's ever done that, even if it's just for kicks and giggles, right? But when you go to the Yellow Pages and you look for, like, churches, like, it'll break them up into, you know, it'll start with, like, Anglican and, you know, go all the way down until you get to some weird ones with the letters X's and Z's and stuff. But the point is you get all these different groups, these different church groups, all these different names. And he was pointing out that most people don't necessarily know, like, the difference between Anglican and Episcopalian and AME and Baptist. They just know church, and they just go looking for church, and then they think, okay, well, which one's the closest to me? And we look at the address. But what I found fascinating about what he was saying about the Yellow Pages is the fact that nobody even uses the Yellow Pages anymore. The Yellow Pages is something from, like, years and a time long past. Like, he was even talking about how now he said he would literally every year he would get angry at the Yellow Pages because he would show up, walk out of his door, and stumble over it, right? Because that's pretty much all it is. It's now, the Yellow Pages is like a doorstop. It's like this book that just is real heavy and thick and it gets in your way. And, you know, this picture, it was interesting because people describe this in business. They talk about the Yellow Pages as like this arcane thing. Like, it's marketing in a nursing home. It's marketing set out the pasture because they've lost what they used to be. They're no longer the industry standard when it comes to how to find things, how to find businesses, right? And even more than that, you think about how they can't command advertising dollars the way that they used to. It just doesn't work because now we have smartphones. Now we just literally Google it. You know, we just search for it, or we have different apps that tell us everything. You can even get your navigation. You just put in restaurant, and it'll, you know, pull them all up, and you choose which one. It'll actually take you to it. The Yellow Pages can't do that. You know, what is left of the Yellow Pages, right? And this is an example of what has happened to the Yellow Pages. This is an office, and what they do is Yellow Pages gives you a Yellow Page book for every phone number that you have. And so this is a business where they probably have like 50 different extensions. And the Yellow Pages actually brought them like 50 books. Like, what am I going to do with 50 Yellow Pages? What are we going to do with one? I challenge you all, go home and find the Yellow Pages if you have one in your house. Everybody's like, nope, I don't have it. I don't know where it is. Do we even have, did you throw that out? You know, here's the thing. When we think about the Yellow Pages and how they market it, we can see it and how they've had to adjust and they change and change the logo, change their scheme, become, you know, some app that is, you know, responsive or something. But yet, when we think about us, with all the resources we've been given for years and years and years, all the knowledge, all the teaching, all the ways in which God has impacted your life, are we adaptive? Are we shrewd in the way that we go about teaching and sharing and living out the gospel of Christ? Another passage, Matthew chapter 10. I did get this one correct. Matthew chapter 10, verse 16 through 20, it says, I am sending you out like sheep among wolves. Therefore, be as shrewd as snakes and as innocent as doves. Be on your guard. You will be handed over to the local councils and be flogged in the synagogues. On my account, you will be brought before governors and kings as witnesses to them and to the Gentiles. But when they arrest you, do not worry about what to say or how to say it. At that time, you will be given what to say, for it will not be you speaking, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. You know, I talked about that shrewd thing because in context, when we think about Jesus, it's like, first of all, you're telling me I'm not good at managing my resources, and you're telling me to go out and buy some friends, and you're telling me I need to act like a snake. Like, what is this, Jesus? This is not like you. Did you not rest well? I said, what is all of this? But we need to make sense of what Jesus is trying to tell his people, what he's telling his disciples. And when we see here, it says, I'm sending you out like sheep among wolves. I'm sending you out into this dangerous place. But he's saying, don't be defenseless. He said, be shrewd as snakes. And so when we think about shrewd, and he keeps this parallel between shrewd and we think of snakes, well, what is a snake? And you think about a snake, like, this is a snake. Now, some of you with better vision than others, you don't have to hide her eyes. She can't see it. It's okay. Because he's hiding. He's hiding in plain sight. Right? Like, yeah, we know. I just told you it's a snake. So, of course, you can see it's a snake. But let me tell you something. A couple months ago, back before it was cold, my wife and I, we're out there in the front, and we're digging up weeds and stuff. True story, right? She's back there nodding right now. We're out there digging up weeds, and you should have seen this woman jump. This was amazing. Okay? And I'm thinking, what is all of this? There was a snake. It was underneath there. It was in the bushes. And we didn't see it, right? See, that's what snakes do. Snakes are sitting there hiding in place. They see, you don't even see the snake in this one, do you? Some of you, you're like, yeah, I see it. No, you don't. You walk out here right now, there's a snake out there in the grass. See, that's his natural habitat. The reason why he has survived and evolved and made it this long is because he blends in. Snakes are patient. Snakes wait for their opportunity. They don't just rush out there. You notice in that passage before we were just reading where he talks about the sheep and the wolves, and he talks about snakes. See, the thing about wolves will come in a pack, and they'll gang up on you, and they'll beat you up. You know, they don't travel alone like that. Wolf pack, that's how you get the name, right? Snakes are like, no, that's okay. I got time. I can just sit here. I'll hide on these rocks with these leaves. I'm going to help some of you guys out because I know it's bothering you. This is the snake, right? See? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You know, here's another one. Like, I'm going to help you out again. This is the snake's eye. This is the sand, right? He's saying be shrewd as snakes. There's other examples. Be wise as a serpent. All of these characteristics, he's not saying go be the serpent. What he's saying is you have to understand. And when he says that the children of the light, that they're not getting it, they don't handle it well, what he's saying is there's an expectation that people in the world who have no concept of who God is, there's an expectation and an understanding that I've got to handle my affairs in a shrewd manner. Well, what does all of this mean? It means we got this church here, but are we using it in a shrewd and wise and perceptive way? Well, I've got cars and I've got money, I've got wealth, but are you using it for God in a shrewd and perceptive in a wise way. See, when we think about what it means to be shrewd, what it means as he's comparing shrewd to being a snake, he was talking about the wolves because the wolves, that's what he was talking about, the Pharisees. He's talking about how the teachers of the law and religious people, how they make people feel bad and they browbeat them and they come at them harsh and they make them feel guilty and they, you know, use their authority to take advantage. And he's saying, no, don't be like the wolves. You know, Jesus talked about the wolves and the sheep a lot. He's saying, don't be like the wolves. He's saying, but be like the serpent. See, one of the things that we often forget is that even the very shirt that you're wearing came from God. Tony got up here, he talked about, let's pray for our giving. There's a reason why we pray as we give and as we pass that plate around, as we collect money, because it's not enough to just say, well, we do this kind of in a rote way where we just kind of do it every Sunday and we know this is going to happen. But every dime that you give, every time you get that raise, you get a promotion, every time you get an inheritance, every time you're gifted something, every time you purchase a TV, do you purchase your TV with the idea that, ooh, wow, that's on sale, Black Friday came early, and I want to get a big old TV because I can afford it? Or did you buy that TV because you said, you know what, this is a bigger TV, now I can have more people over to my house and we can enjoy some time together? That is an example of being shrewd. When you say, you know what, I don't really need a car, but I see that this car is a really good deal. I know the person who's selling it. He only wants $800 for it. Well, what am I going to do with another car? What can I use another car for? Well, maybe you can. But maybe with your resources, with your money, with the things that God has given you, he's saying no. But you get it because there's somebody who needs it. There's somebody who needs that food. There's somebody who needs whatever it is you have. But are we being shrewd? Because there are a lot of people who may not be open to hearing the gospel. Because, again, this is all in context of spreading the gospel, sharing the word, telling people what it is to be like Christ. But are we actually using all of our tools and resources to bring people closer to him? Because there's a lot of people that may not be able to hear you on an empty stomach. Or they don't really want to talk to you about it because they're getting ready to go wait at the bus stop. See, some of us, we've accumulated massive amounts of knowledge and tools and materials and sometimes in many cases money, but are we using it the right way? And we have to ask ourselves this. Are we being shrewd as these snakes? Matthew chapter 25, we'll finish it here. Starting in verse 14. I'm going to read through this whole thing. It says, again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his wealth to them. To one he gave 5 bags of gold, to another 2 bags, and to another 1 bag, each according to his ability. Now, I want to pause there. I know we've talked about this in the past. I'm sure you've read this in the past, but we've talked about this in the past. Now, the reason why I want to pause there is because it's important to understand that everything that we have has been given to us by God to be used for his purpose, but it was given to us according to our own ability, which means none of us has an excuse to not be able to make good and get a return on his investment. Let's move on. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received 5 bags of gold went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 bags more. So also the one with 2 bags of gold gained 2 more. But the man who had received 1 bag went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received 5 bags of gold brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 bags of gold. See, I've gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with two bags of gold also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with two bags of gold. See, I have gained two more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received one bag of gold came. Master, he said, I knew that you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your gold in the ground. See, here's what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I return, I would have received it back with interest. So take the bag of gold from him and give it to the one who has 10 bags. For whoever has will be given more, and they will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what they have will be taken from them. And throw the worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. We think about this in the context of snakes and being shrewd, being prudent, being wise, and how we invest all of our resources. Suddenly, this parable of these bags of gold, in some versions the talents, suddenly this parable takes on a whole new meaning. Suddenly it makes more sense. See, what we have and what God gives us, he's giving it to us in accordance to what it is that we can handle. He's not expecting you to go be this overachiever that quadruples his money. And it's always important to note when it says that the master came back after being gone for a long time, it wasn't like he left and came back a week later and said, okay, what you got? He was gone for years. More than enough time for them to have been productive. More than enough time for him to come back and reasonably expect that they had gotten a return on what he invested in them. But were they shrewd with it? Were they careful with it? Were they wise with it? See, sometimes we look at things and we say, well, I don't want to mess up. I don't want to go out there and say the wrong thing. I don't want to go out there and people look at me and think, well, they don't have all the answers. So then we say, well, that's the reason why I'm not going to tell anybody anything. That's the reason why I'm not going to share my faith. That's the reason why I'm not going to do fill in the blank. See, ultimately what we see here, and we know this when we look at this parable, he was a coward. He was afraid. He didn't have the faith necessary to go out and make good on even one bag of gold. We've talked about it in the past, but it's estimated that the bag of gold was worth somewhere in the neighborhood of $500,000 if we go by, you know, today's standards, right? And when we think about, if I give you $500,000 and the only thing I'm expecting is $1 million, and I'm going to come back to you 10 years later, I'm come back to you 20 years later. I'm expecting you to turn my $500,000. He said, you could, and important to understand, the Jewish culture, they didn't even want you to deal with bankers because bankers were corrupt. They were crooks. They charged people really heavy and high interest rates and exploited them. But he's saying, even if you had done that, it would have been better than doing nothing. I raise that point because so many times we look at other groups, other churches, other people who we look at and we say they're perverting the gospel. They're changing it and making it fit what they want. They're not even doing it right. But they're doing something. They're making good on something. And yet many of us, we have to ask ourselves the hard question. Have I been shrewd and say, well, maybe it won't work this way, but it could work that way? God, give me some answers. Holy Spirit, please help me to see, how can I make good on all of this investment that you've given me? Are we using all the resources that God has given us to spread the gospel? Or are we holding back and calling it being wise, calling it being prudent, calling it being shrewd, but in reality, it's no more than cowardice. It's no more than faithlessness. Because, see, if God was expecting us to go out here and literally reach everybody in Dover, you might say, wow, we're grossly inequipped for that. Okay, maybe that's not a reasonable expectation. Maybe that's not even what God expects. But does he expect you to reach someone at some point? Does he expect you to share the gospel with anybody? Does he expect you to bring someone to a point where all the resources he's given you, you can now give it to them and dispense it in such a way, like we looked at the shrewd manager? Because you might be thinking, well, like he said, hey, I can't dig, I'm too old, I'm too tired to dig, and I certainly don't want to go out here and beg, but what can you do now? See, he squandered so much, but he didn't just sit there in pity. He didn't just sit there and say, well, it's too late now, I'm not going to do anything. He said, no, I'm going to do something. He even says that, you know what? He was dishonest, but I commit. How could Jesus commend somebody who was doing something that was dishonest? Because he said, at least they are trying to do something. At least they are trying, even if it's the last minute. They're trying to make a comeback. They're trying to do something, even though it's impossible. They're trying to do something. Are we even trying to use the resources that God has given us to be fruitful, to multiply, to bring others who are looking to the truth? And so I want to close here. A few questions. First one, am I committed to leveraging God's resources and investment in me, or am I content to sit on those very same resources out of fear and insecurity? Insecurity, like I'm inadequate. I haven't been living the way I need to be living for so long, and I really haven't been faithful like I need to be. And yet we see that worker, when it's time to give an account, he did something. He was crafty. He was shrewd. He figured out a way. I at least have to show something. Do we leverage our resources in that way? Do we leverage the tools and the things that God has given us, our money even, do we leverage it in such a way that we can use it to his glory, to help others? Number two, am I willing to reconsider and change the way that I represent and tell people about the gospel of Christ? Why or why not? See, oftentimes the difficulty that we face is, and I've been guilty of this, this is why this hit me so hard, because we know one way. And yet, the wise person, the shrewd person, the person who is able to adapt. See, the snake fits right in. You know, the snake is patient. The snake is waiting. The snake is waiting for that opportunity. And the snake's not going to sit there and say, well, you know, maybe I'll wait for another opportunity. He said, no, I got an opportunity right now. I'm going to strike. How many times has God given us an opportunity to impact someone's life, to be able to help somebody have a relationship with God, and yet we weren't shrewd enough or wise enough or attentive enough to use that opportunity? And we call it being patient, and we call it all these things, but in reality, we just don't have enough faith in him. We have to look and think about, what is it that God expects? Am I willing to change the way I do things. We talked about the Yellow Pages. We know that the Yellow Pages, I mean, it's kind of over. They had to come up with another way. They eventually adapted. They took them a long time. They eventually got to the point where they said, we got to go online. We got to put our directory online because people are just not flipping and letting the fingers do the walking anymore. How are we going to change and adapt in such a way that we can still be effective even though the way that we've always known it, the way we've always done it, no longer works? Do I recognize how the world leverages assets to further their causes better than God's people? In efforts to blend in, am I really just cowering back and not being shrewd with my purpose? Now, I used some examples earlier, but I was talking to Harold about this the other day, about how, you know, Harold is, I'm just going to say it even though I don't want him to say it. Harold is past his prime as a basketball player. Okay, it's over. Like, he's just not going to, there's no hope of making it to the league anymore, right? He had those dreams before, but now it's over. He's going to be mad at me. But here's the thing. Harold says, but you know what? I want to coach. I want to use my knowledge and my insight. I can't dunk anymore. If I do, bad things will happen. I don't know how I'm going to, I told him, I said, I could probably get the rim, but I don't know if I could land, right? After I landed, it would take me a month before I could walk again. But here's the thing, can you still coach? Because at the end of the day, God didn't give you all that time and ability and skills and all his experience of being a basketball player and playing in college, all those things. He gave you those things so that you could then go and teach other young men and young women how to play. Because now you have a voice with those people. Now you don't just have a voice with those kids that you're coaching and influencing, but now you have a voice with their parents. Now you have a voice with all the other people, all the other coaches who you're going to be working with. See, the world is shrewd. They call that networking. They call that building relationships and networking. And so what do? They pick up business cards, or here, we'll tag each other and we'll get each other's email and we'll bump phones and we'll just change information. Like, it's so quick now, but you go to these networking parties, you go to these, you know, meetup groups, you find like book clubs, people find ways of networking in the world. How much are we looking to network? How much are we looking to say, you know what? I may not even want to read that book. That may not even be something in my interest, but I want to be in that book club because now I'll be in relationships with other people. Are we being shrewd? Are we leveraging all the months and years of information, knowledge, wisdom, all the way the Spirit has guided us? Are we leveraging that so that we can then go and be effective what God has entrusted us with? Or are we hiding it like this man who was afraid to make a mistake? Because I have news for you. You were going to make a mistake anyway. Right? We all know that. And finally, have I forgotten that everything I have is, in fact, his? Am I daily aware that my many things are actually on lease? Even my own life. See, oftentimes we forget that we're not owners, we're just renting. It's just a lease. You got to turn it back in, right? You know, you got to turn it back in. It don't matter how many, they don't care how many miles you drove as long as you got the money when you turn it in. Like, please, feel free, drive to California 10 times. But you're going to turn the lease in. You got to pay for those miles, right? See, we forget that our own life, our money, our riches, our homes, they're on lease. We're renting those things. So when you have an extra room and you could be hospitable and bring someone in, are you willing to do it? Or you say, well, no, it wouldn't be wise. It wouldn't be prudent to just have people over my home all the time, or just invite people over to watch the game, or just build relationships. I need to spend my time building up and doing things for my stuff when in fact it's not even your stuff. It's not even your life. You go to the gym, you work out, you eat right. You go to the health store and you buy food that's five times as expensive as you find it at Food Lion. But there's a reason why you're this health nut, this junkie that decides, I just have to eat everything organic. Because organic people need to know Jesus too. They need somebody to build a relationship with them too. God, why is it that I have diabetes? Why is it I have to go to this clinic? Why is it that I have sickle cell or cancer? Why is it that, why? Why is my life this way? Because I'm trying to put you in front of people so that you can leverage what it is I've been giving you to reach other people. So that's why you have that job. That's why you have that illness. That's why you have that car. That's why you have to go to the Chrysler dealership tomorrow and fight with them over a $30 license tag light bulb. Yes, this is personal. I'm not happy about it. But there is likely someone there that I'm going to have to represent to be like Jesus, that I'm going to have to reach. I have to build those relationships. That's why we have what we have. It's not for us to keep. It's not our own. Not even your own life. Have you been living your life for Jesus? Do you know what it is to live your life for Jesus? Have you sat down and talked to somebody and asked them, how can you help me be like Jesus? Do you even know what that is? If not, don't leave here without seeking and searching and asking the hard question and being willing to say, help me, because I don't want to leave here and squander everything that God has given me. But for the vast majority of us, we have to be willing to say, I'm not going to leave here today without committing that I'm going to leverage everything that God has given me so that I can be useful in making good on that gospel that was implanted in me, so that I can be helpful in finding another person who is seeking him as well. Because after all, it's none of ours. We don't own it. We don't even own our lives. What does it say? We were all bought at a price. How much was that price for you? And are you willing to take that deposit that was given to you and make good on it? Please stand as we sing our song of invitation.